Now, kapayapaan. Peace.
Shanti.
Shalom.
Freedom.
Mir.
Samadhanam.
Alafia.
Tenishlik.
Salam. Salam.
Pak.
Barış.
Mir.
Aman.
İzze.
Emir Embe.
Udo.
Nabak.
Barış.
Du befinner deg trengt opp i Fredsaktivt hjørne, en serie med ujevne mellomrom på ubestemt tid, her på Radio Rakel. Hvordan det å være menneske i en verden preget av mye ufred? Hva kan vi maktesløse gjøre for å endre og påvirke? Kanskje du finner noen svar underveis? Det ser håpløst ut, men gir vi opp? Håper du med meg i et rungende «Ikke faen!» Senvinter i Norge 2024. To fedre, den ene palestiner, den andre israeler, som har mistet hvert sitt barn til fienden. To medmennesker, to som kjemper for samme sak, forsoning. Møt Rami og Bassam.
My name is Rami Elhanan, I'm 74 years old, graphic designer, living in Jerusalem. I was born in Jerusalem, seventh generation. My mother was born in the old city of Jerusalem, an ultra-Orthodox Jewish family. My father came to this country in 1946. After spending 1 year in Auschwitz, he was very badly wounded in the 48 war. She was the nurse that took care of him, and this is the reason why I'm able to speak to you. I am a Jew, I'm an Israeli, and before anything else, I am a human being. The story I'm about to tell you now starts and also ends on one particular day of the Jewish calendar, which is known by the name of Yom Kippur. You know, for the Jews, Yom Kippur is the holiest day of the year. This is the day where we ask forgiveness for our sins. On this very day, 50 years ago, I was a very young soldier fighting this horrible October 73 war. We've started it with a company of 11 tanks. We finished it with only three. I've lost over there in the desert of Sinai across the Suez Canal some of my very close and best friends. And I came out of it a very angry and disappointed young man with one determination to detach myself from any kind of involvement or commitment. I got out of the army. I went to Bezalel Art School to become a graphic designer. I met my wife and got married, and I had four kids. And 40 years ago, on the very eve of Yom Kippur, September 1983, my daughter was born in Hadassah Hospital in Jerusalem. Her name was Smadar. The name Smadar is taken from the Bible, the Song of Solomon. It means the grape of vine, which means the opening of the flower. And she really was a very sparkling and vivid and joyful and energetic little girl. She was very beautiful. She was an excellent student, she was a swimmer, she was a dancer, she played the piano. She was amazing. Everybody used to call her the princess. And we lived a very good life in our house in Jerusalem. My wife, which is a professor for education in the Hebrew University, my three boys, and this princess in what seemed to be the perfect, sheltered, protected lives. In so many ways, you could say that we put ourselves inside a big bubble. Completely detached from the outside world, minding our own business. I was doing graphic design for the right wing, for the left wing, whoever paid me. Life was relatively very beautiful and comfortable. And this went on until about 26 years ago. On the 4th of September 1997, just a few days before Yom Kippur, this bubble of ours was blown up to millions of pieces. Two Palestinian suicide bombers, Hamas members, blew themselves up in Ben Yehuda Street in the center of Jerusalem. They killed five people that day, including three little girls. One of these girls was my 14 years old, Smadar. It was the first day of school, Thursday afternoon, and the beginning of a very long and very cold night, which continues until today. At first, when you hear about the explosion, you keep hoping that maybe this time this finger will not turn towards you. Gradually you find yourself running in the streets trying to find her. She completely disappeared. And you go from hospital to hospital, from police station to police station, many long and frustrating hours until eventually very, very late that night, you find yourself in Abu Kabir in the morgue, and this finger is stuck right between your eyes, and you see this sight, which you will never ever be able to forget for the rest of your life. And then you come back home, the house immediately is filled with thousands and thousands of people coming to pay respect, to offer condolences. These are the 7 days of the Jewish mourning period, it's called Shiva, and you are kind of enveloped by these thousands and thousands of people in a very clever traditional way that is designed to ease your passage to the new kind of life which expects you. On the eighth day they go home, everyone, to their normal everyday businesses. Suddenly you are left alone and you need to wake up and you need to stand up and face yourself. And you have to make a decision. What are you going to do now with this new unbearable burden on your shoulders? What are you going to do now with this new personality of yourself, which you never thought could have existed? What are you going to do with this anger that eats you alive from within? And there are only two ways to choose from. The first one is obvious. When someone kills your 14 years old little girl, you are so angry and you want to get even. When someone punches you in the face, the automatic response is punch back. This is human, and this is natural, and this is the way most people choose, the way of revenge and retaliation, this way that creates this endless cycle of violence which never stops, this cycle of violence that we see these days. But then after a while you start to think, you know, we are human beings, we are not animals. And you start asking yourself questions. Will killing anyone will bring her back? Will causing pain to anyone will ease this unbearable pain? And the answer is certainly not. So in a very graduated and complicated process you come to the other option, which is much more difficult, trying to understand what happened here. Why did it happen? How does such a horrible thing take place? What can cause someone to be that mad, that desperate, that hopeless, that he's willing to blow himself up with 14 years old little girl? Do you have some kind of connection to it yourself? Maybe some kind of responsibility? And then the most important question of them all, what can you do personally in order to prevent this unbearable pain from other people, from other families? Well, it's not easy, it takes time. It took me almost a year. Foolishly enough, at the beginning I thought that I could go on with my life pretending as if nothing ever happened. Go back to my studio, try to lead a normal life, but nothing was normal anymore. And I was not the same person anymore. And about a year later, on some occasion I met a big man who changed my life completely. His name was Yitzhak Frankenthal. He was a religious Jewish guy, you know, with a big kippah on his head. And you know how we tend to put people into drawers and we stigmatize people and we judge people by the way they dress, what they put on their heads, around their necks. And I was certain that this guy with the kippah on his head is a fascist and a right winger, that he eats Arabs for breakfast, and I prepared myself to fight him. We started talking. He told me about his son Arik, a soldier who was kidnapped and murdered by Hamas in 1994, and about this organization that he created of people who lost their loved ones and still wanted peace and search for peace and fought for peace. And I looked at him and I remembered that this was one of these thousands and thousands of people that came to my house during the 7 days of mourning a year before, and I went crazy. I was so angry with him. I asked him, how could you do it? How could you step into someone's house who just lost his daughter and assume that he wants peace? And he was not insulted. He just invited me over to watch a meeting of this group of crazy people. And he did. And I was a little bit curious. I said, okay. And I went to see. It was 25 years ago. It took place in our late president Ezra Weizmann's house. I was standing aside, very detached, very reluctant and very cynical, as I always am. And I was watching those people coming down from the buses. And from the buses came down people that for me, as an Israeli patriot, were always living legends. People, I used to look up to them, I used to admire them, I used to read about them in the newspapers, and I never ever thought that one day I will become one of them, people who lost their loved ones. I saw people like Yaakov Gutermann. Yaakov Gutermann is a Holocaust survivor from Poland. He lost his son Raz in the First Lebanon War, and he was one of the first Israeli bereaved parents that had the guts to demonstrate against this evil war in Lebanon in times where you need to be a very brave person to do so. I saw people like Ronnie Hirschhausen, a very close and dear friend of mine, who was known in Jerusalem to be a peace activist. And Ronnie lost his two sons, two soldiers, in this ongoing war, and remained highly motivated peace activist. And then I saw something else. Then I saw something which was completely new to me, to my heart, to my mind, to my soul. I was standing there watching the Palestinian bereaved families coming down from the buses, walking towards me, shaking my hand for peace, hugging me, crying with me, and I was so deeply shocked. You see, I was 47 years old at the time, and until today I'm ashamed to admit it was the first time ever in my life I have met Palestinians as human beings, not as workers in the streets, not as terrorists, not as transparent people, as human beings who carry the same burden that I carry, who suffer exactly like I suffer. And I was so shocked and so moved. I remember seeing this old Arab lady coming down from the bus with this long black traditional Palestinian dress, and she had a picture of a 6-year-old kid on her chest, exactly like my wife, carrying the name of our daughter Smadari on hers. I'm not a religious person. I have no way of explaining what happened to me back then, 25 years ago. All I can tell you is, from that moment on until today, I devote my life to go everywhere possible, to talk to anyone possible, people who want to listen and people who will not listen, to convey this very basic and very simple message which says we are not doomed. This is not our destiny to keep on killing each other in this holy land of ours forever. We can change it, and we can break once and for all this endless cycle of violence and revenge and retaliation. The only way to do it is simply by talking to each other, because it will not stop unless we talk. I believe deeply that one can teach himself how to listen. I believe deeply that once you are able to listen to the pain of the other, you can expect the other to listen to your pain, and then only then, together, start this very long journey towards reconciliation, maybe some kind of solution. It's a very long and bumpy road. There are no shortcuts in this road. But this is the only way possible, because the other way leads to nowhere, and the price of the other way is horrible. So this is what we are trying to do at the Parent Circle. We have one common denominator. What unites us is the understanding that we lost our children because of this abnormal situation which one people is dominating another. What unites us is the understanding that we lost our children because of the Israeli occupation. And we need to do everything non-violent in our ability to save other families from experiencing this horrible fate. So we bang our heads against this very high wall of hatred and fear that divide our two nations today, and we put cracks in it, crack after crack. And through these little cracks, a little light comes in, and a little light can drive away a lot of darkness until we will put those walls down, because the alternative is horrible and the pain is unbearable. And we have an enormous ally on our side, which is the power of our pain. And you should know that the power of pain is tremendous. It's very much similar to the nuclear energy. And like this horrible energy, you can use it in order to bring darkness and destruction and pain and death to people. And you can use the same energy to bring light and warmth and hope. So we go around the country. We go from high school to high school. We meet Israelis, we meet Palestinians, and we tell them that our blood is exactly the same color, that our pain is exactly the same pain, and our tears are just as bitter. And if we who have paid the highest price possible, if we who have every reason on earth to want to kill each other, if we can call each other brother, anyone can, anyone should, I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
When I decide to marry, I want to have a son, not a daughter. Because women didn't treat well in my world. And I want to give a very special name to this son, so no one can recognize his religion or his nationality. I will give him the name Adam. I will teach him that your God is love. Your religion is humanity. And your mosque, or church, or synagogue is every human being's heart. This is the Syrian writer Muhammad al-Ma'oud. It's very difficult to be a Palestinian. It's very difficult to grow up under strange occupation as kids. And you don't understand why those people come to occupy your neighborhood or your village. They don't look like us, they don't speak our language, and we don't know why they come to occupy us. We just hated them, and we don't need education to hate those strangers. They are very brutal soldiers for us. I notice that they become very nervous when they see the Palestinian flag, and I don't know why. But with other four kids, we create local military group at the age of 13. Our mission is to raise the flag at night around our school in order to make the Israeli soldiers nervous and crazy. This was our goal. At the age of 16, we find some old weapons in a cave with the different weapons. We don't know how to use it. But two of my friends throw the two grenades on the Israeli patrols, soldiers in our village near Hebron. And in that time, no one killed, no one injured, because they don't know how to use it in a professional way. At the age of 17, all of us have been arrested. So the first one gets 21 years in jail, 19, 15, 14, and I had 7 years. I learned in jail, if you know your enemy, you can defeat him or you can kill him. If you only hate him, you will kill yourself. So in fact, I start to study Hebrew, the language of the enemy, because I want to kill my enemy, and at that time I want to kill Rami. It's not personal. And a few months later, by chance, I watch a movie about the Holocaust. I believe you hear about the Holocaust. So what I know about the Holocaust at that time, someone called Hitler, I don't know from where this Hitler, who killed 6 million Jewish people, but it's a big lie. It never happened. And those Zionists use this big lie to justify their crimes, their occupation against my people, and to bring more support from Europe and the States. So this is what I believe. In fact, I want to enjoy seeing this movie as a kind of revenge, to see someone torture those Jewish, kill them, arrest them, occupy them, because I am in their jails. What happened after a few minutes, suddenly I found myself crying, get sympathy with those innocent people. It was too much for me. I don't expect to see such atrocities. I don't believe that they are human beings, can do the same to other human beings. In fact, I decide that I want to know more about this big lie, if it's really happened or it's just a movie, because in fact I want to understand the brutal behavior of the Israeli soldiers when they come to my village when I was kid. This movie pushed me after many years, more than 25 years, to make my master's degree about the Holocaust in Bradford University in the UK. Then after that, I start to visit death camps in Germany. But it starts as a tool to know your enemy, in order to know how to defeat him or to kill him. Then I understand that if you know more, you act much better. If you don't know, simply you don't know. Then I discover it's much better not to know, in fact, because you always agree with yourself. You are the best. Your religion, your narrative, you are the chosen people. This is your story. When you start to know something different, you start to suffer, in Arabic we said, because you cannot keep silence. I go back to that time in jail. You can imagine it's a very long 7 years. In general, they try to kill our humanity every moment, because for them we are the killers, we are the terrorists, we are the bad guys. And for us, they are the killers, they are the terrorists, they are the bad guys, they are the occupiers, and they are not our example. We need to keep our humanity, our principle, our values, in order to continue our struggle to achieve freedom to our people. They never broke us. You just become more determined to continue your way, especially your armed struggle against this brutal occupation. I get released after 7 years, and I still believe in armed struggle as the only way to talk to those people. When I say people, I mean the Israeli army. This is the Israeli people. This is the Jewish people that the Palestinians know and face all the time. In fact, suddenly in 1992, 93, after I get released, we have peace. Oslo Agreement. If you remember, for 30 years. And it was unbelievable for most of the Israelis and the Palestinians. I start to see the same killers, the same terrorists, the Palestinian prisoners. They became generals in the Palestinian security forces. They became the Palestinian Authority. They became partner for peace. And which was unbelievable. What happened, it's an Israeli political decision. PLO in that time was described exactly like Hamas today. And suddenly they became partners for peace. In fact, I start to ask myself, so why I spent 7 years in jail? Just to shake hands with those occupiers? I can't do it without going to jail. And I start to ask myself, why they didn't make this agreement 10 years before, 20 years before? At least I'm not going to be in jail, and they would save thousands and thousands of lives of Israelis and Palestinians. I discover back that more than 100 years we are trying to kill each other, to defeat each other, in spite of Israel with the United States of America, with the rest of Europe, against the Palestinians, but we forget to die. We're still there. But more blood, more pain, more victims. And this Oslo agreement gives us a sign that maybe through negotiations we can achieve something, such a peace agreement. So in that time, most of the Israelis and the Palestinians, they support this agreement. I am also part of the Palestinian people. I support it. And I try to think like in a normal way, I thought in that time. So I decide to create my own life. So I get married. I thought this is the normal thing to do in that time. I was young, as you can expect. And I found myself in the other jail forever with my own hands. And suddenly I have 6 kids, which is worse than the Israeli occupation, believe me. It's a lot of responsibility. But I decide that this occupation occupied my life, my family. And my mission is to protect them, to educate them, to raise them up, especially we have peace now. I decide I'm not going to allow to my son to be in the Israeli jail for 7 years because he don't know, or because he want to raise the flag. I am here, I know how to educate them, especially when I learn that there is no way to peace. As Gandhi said, peace is the way. You need to start with yourself. Unfortunately, if you live in Palestine or Israel, still it's not the same level, but you have no safe place for yourself. And sometimes if you survive, it's only by chance, which is not a normal life. I start to be active in my society, in the Palestinian side, without any connection with the other side. Until 2002 and 2003, I start to hear in the Israeli media about something called refuseniks, which is ex-Israeli soldiers and officers who refuse to serve in the occupied territories or in Palestine. because they love Israel, which is strange for me, because it's against the Jewish values and against the Zionist values, which totally didn't work for the Palestinians. Zionist with values, there is nothing like this, but I wish to meet those people to understand why they really refuse to continue occupying us. 2005, by chance, we had the first meeting between four Palestinians, ex-prisoners, I was one of them, with seven ex-Israeli officers and soldiers. Rami's son was one of them. This is how I get to know this noble enemy in 2005. And Mr. Yonatan Shapira was one of them. So you can imagine the first meeting. It was the most difficult meeting in my life. We don't trust them. We hate them. You need to stand up and maybe to smile and to shake hands and to understand why he occupied you. It's very difficult. At the same time, we can see the fear in their eyes. For the first time, they're coming to meet the Palestinian terrorists or killers without their guns, without their units. It's really scary. We meet around 4 hours. We decide to meet again, another 4 hours, and again and again. We continue to meet for 1 year. We became 300 members from both sides. When we discover that we are the same. Yes, we want to kill each other to achieve the same thing. We want peace and security. Of course, each one from his point of view. And if you're familiar with Jalal al-Din Rumi, he says, beyond right and wrong, there is a field. Let us meet there, or meet me there. Believe me, we know who is right, we know who is wrong. In spite of that, we said, maybe we can survive together. So at the end of the year, we create a movement, we call it Combatants for Peace, and our slogan was what Nelson Mandela says. He says, if you want to make peace with your enemy, you need to work with your enemy. Then your enemy becomes your partner. And this was our goal, to create a partnership between the Israelis and the Palestinians. It's not our goal to be friends, or to love each other, or to like each other. We must be partners from both sides. In fact, 2 years later, on the 16th of January 2007, an Israeli border police shot and killed my 10-year-old daughter, Abir, in the front of her school, from a distance of 15 to 20 meters, in her head, from the back. She was my third child. Abir fell down, and 2 days later, she passed away in Hadassah Hospital, where she born, and where Smadar born and died. Between Abir and Smadar, it's 10 years, but we don't know each other. But we discover that it's the same killer, the same criminal, who take off the lives of our daughters. It's our common enemy. It's the Israeli occupation, which create violence and resistance and brutality. From the beginning, I said, I wish Abir will be the last victim between the Israelis and the Palestinians. I'm not going to take revenge because simply we decide to break this circle. And if we continue to fight, we will continue killing each other forever. In fact, I consider the killer of my daughter as a victim. And I met him after 3.5 years in the Israeli court in Jerusalem. And I said to him, you are not a hero and you are not a warrior. You didn't kill the enemy or the terrorist, you just killed 10 years innocent girl. And if you are proud of what you did, you can enjoy your crime. I don't ask for revenge because I don't take revenge from victims. And you are not less victim than your victim. But in any day in your life, if you come to ask me to forgive you, always you will find me there. But it's not because of yourself at all. It's because of myself. Because I really love my daughter very much. And because I have another 5 kids. I don't want them to grow up as victims to you. And you are victim by yourself. What happened 2 days after I lost my daughter, I joined the Parents Circle Families Forum. Because I know Rami 2 years before. I know this noble people, this noble organization, but in my worst dream, I don't want to join this amazing group. The last thing I want to say about, especially Jerusalem, is a holy place for the Christians, in spite they keep silence right now. It's a holy place for the Jewish people. it's more than holy for us, for the Muslims. We call Jerusalem the capital of the sky, the key of the sky. We believe the paradise would be in Jerusalem. But I want to say that in spite we love Jerusalem, we kill each other for Jerusalem, and we meet each other under the ground of Jerusalem, and I am not sure if Jerusalem know who we are. We need to decide to live side by side or together and to share the same land, Eretz Israel, or the Promised Land, Palestine, or the Islamic land, the same land, as one state, or two states, or five states. Otherwise, we will share the same land as two big graves to our kids, our families, and our people. Unfortunately, as long as the Israeli occupation continue, we will never accept the Israeli occupation. We will continue to sacrifice the blood of our kids from both sides to protect the holy stones of Jerusalem. And we want to spread the message that we can live together or side by side, and we are the example. Thank you very much for listening.
I think the basic problem now is that our conflict became a kind of reality game. Reality game like in television, where the world is sitting on the balcony watching those two crazy people fighting each other. It's a zero-sum game with the mentality of football teams. My team is the only team. We have to eliminate the other team, and everything is focused on that aim. When people don't understand that actually it has become a competition of pain, and we use our wounds to show whose wound is bigger, who started that, who's to blame, and there is no sensitivity and no acceptance of the pain of the other, which is the essence of inhumanity, which is in the essence of everything wrong with our planet and with the way we are dealing with the problems. We, at October 7th, we were talking to one another on the phone. We didn't know the magnitude and the cruelty of the event. Bassam was joking, telling me that he offers me a shelter in his house now that it's our turn to occupy you. And on the other phone, my wife was talking to her cousin in Be'eri, in Kibbutz Be'eri, speaking from the sealed room, describing what the atrocities. The feeling was that our life work is collapsing, that everything we did for the last 20 years is down the drain. It took us some time to wake up and to understand, when the smoke was dismantling, that actually we have to stop looking at the reality through the keyhole of the last event, that we have to use this dirty word, context, that we have to rise above the occasion and understand that it's an event, one more event, very bloody and painful event in a chain of events that is going on for the last 150 years, that you cannot put 2 million people in a box, close the cover, and expect that nothing will happen. It will blow up in your face. And it's our task to call to all the people around the world and to understand that the conflict did not start on October 7th and will not end on October 8th. That the massacre that is taking place on October 7th and on October 8th, and the long lines of little bodies and little coffins are getting longer and longer, and the task of every human being with a little bit of feeling in its heart is to call for immediate ceasefire and immediate discussion between people who can talk to each other. And I say here openly and very bluntly, I have no sympathy for Hamas. Hamas are the killers of my daughter. I will stick to the devil itself to save one drop of blood. And what I expect people like you and people in this audience and all around the world to gather around. We are wider and stronger for those who want to eliminate the other side. We are stronger and wider for those who the justice totally and there is no other side. We are stronger and wider to be able to shout in a very, very large voice, because we are much more people than we should shout out. Palestine, from the river to the sea, everyone should be free. This should be the slogan, this should be the say. And we gather around, all the peace-loving people, to show that all the people who love peace and are willing to pay the price of peace, and the price of peace is known. We are stronger than anyone else, and I hope you will join me in this call.
In fact, we see it very clearly. And this is why we are not politicians, with all the respect of the politicians. We are not diplomats. We didn't make it easy for any kind. So to talk how I met Rami, you need to know something in our mentality, the Palestinians. It's not a big honor for a Palestinian to have an Israeli friend. What's the meaning of friend? They occupied our land. There is no friendship between the Israelis and the Palestinians. We meet each other as partners. We want to create a partnership for peace again. We don't need to love each other. We don't need to like each other. We need to respect each other. And I said that from the beginning to them. You can enjoy hating me forever. In the end, you will have heart attack. Respect me, my borders, my human right, my right to exist. I will respect yours, and we can live in peace while we are hating each other. But we are human beings. We get to know each other, to respect each other as partners, because we care about the Israelis and the Palestinians. We care about our fellow human beings all over the world, not only Israelis and Palestinians. We believe in every person on earth need to enjoy peace and justice and humanity and dignity, and especially our kids, especially the children all over the world. And I believe since we met from the first meeting, Rami fell in love with me. I cannot say no. We become a very close friends, as I said. And when my tragedy happened 2 years after I meet Rami, we became a family. فكر بغيرك تخشوف على زلتها. Think of others. As you prepare your breakfast, think of others. Don't forget to feed the doves. As you conduct your wars, think of others. Don't forget those who seek peace. As you go to pay your water bill, think of others, of those who only have the clouds to drink from. As you sleep and count the stars, think of others, of those who have no place to sleep in. As you go home, your own home, think of others. Don't forget the people of tents. As you speak freely with metaphors, think of others, of those who lost their right to speak. As you think of others, distant others, think of yourself and wish you are a candle in the darkness. This is our late national poet Mahmoud Darwish. Martin Luther King says, in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. So we call you not to keep silence and not to take sides. We want you to be pro-peace and justice and against injustice. What I mean when you call for justice for the Palestinians, it means security for the Israelis, because it will be no security for the Israelis without a freedom for the Palestinians. We want you to come together Israelis and Palestinians, Jewish and Muslims and Christians, in one call to stop this madness, to stop the violence, and to ask for ceasefire, freedom for everyone, humanity for everyone, security for everyone.
Rami El-Anan og Bassam Aramin besøkte Norge på sin reise sammen for fred, og står som forbilder for oss i en splittet verden som sårt trenger forsoning. Ansvarlig for fredsaktivt hjørne er Heidi Sten Jensen.